We start today's program with a look at what could or should be next in funding for protecting Arizona's vulnerable children. Dana Namark is president and CEO of Children's Action Alliance and joins me now. Dana, good morning.
Good morning.
Before we get into some specifics, I do want to ask you when you anticipate the special session on child protection taking place. What have you heard?
Well, I have a guess that it will either be right before or right after Memorial Day. The only thing we know for sure is that it will be before July 1 because that's the beginning of the fiscal year, and I know the governor wants to have the new agency officially up and running before then.
Considering this is an issue that's been talked about, obviously not just for months, but for years, is this something... Can we measure how long we think the session is going to be? Typically, special sessions, we like those to be short and sweet. Is it possible this one would be less than a week?
It is. As you know, with the legislature, anything is possible. I think that there will be a lot of conversation among legislators and with community groups, hopefully beginning next week, leading up to special session. So it would be ideal if we could get a lot of that discussion and attack on the issues done before that, and that the special session would then be short and sweet.
Dana, what are child care vouchers and why are they a good idea?
Child care vouchers are something we've had for a very long time that actually became expanded under a Ronald Reagan initiative across the country. And the idea of a child care voucher is to help working families who earn low incomes find safe and affordable child care. And it's a win-win-win because it certainly helps those parents. It is good for children to have safe and nurturing places while their children, while their parents are at work, and it helps them learn and develop their skills for school. And it's good for business and for our economy and for our workforce because it gives workers much more stability and reliability that we know our businesses and our employers need. The other win that has become very apparent is that when we have child care vouchers, it does help prevent child neglect. And when we don't have those vouchers and when they're frozen, which has been the case since 2009, we see huge increases in reports of child neglect. And that's certainly not the only reason, but it's a contributing factor. So now is a very good time to go back and rebuild those child care vouchers to help turn those trends around in reports to CPS.
What have you heard from lawmakers on their opinion about child care vouchers?
You know, it's varied. There's a lot of interest, and in those final days of the regular legislative session when they were voting on the budget, there was a lot of intense debate and discussion with very varied opinions among lawmakers. And what we want to do is help them really focus on the results and the consequences. And if our goal is to reduce abuse and neglect, to get the workload manageable for CPS, to help our economy and our businesses, then child care vouchers are an excellent strategy to do that.
Dana, when we think of all the factors, how much attention should the prevention of child abuse and neglect get in the upcoming special session?
Well, it should get substantial attention, and certainly there are so many problems and issues related to how we've been administering child protective services. There are many organizational issues that need attention, but if we ignore prevention and early intervention, we'll be making a big mistake because we will be right back into some other crisis, maybe not this exact crisis, but some other crisis next year or the year after. Early intervention is absolutely the key to helping families be stronger and helping kids be safer.
So why doesn't prevention of neglect and abuse get more attention? Not to say people don't talk about it, but is it one of those things that is almost an unmeasurable until we know that something has happened to a child? The prevention part of it is sort of in that ether somewhere?
That's right. Prevention is often hard to measure, not always, and we do have ways to measure it, but it's harder to measure. And it is one of those things where the benefits are off in the future. And so in our political system and our budgeting system that's year to year, it's sometimes hard to focus on something where the benefits are in the future. But certainly, you know, over many years, as you have pointed out, we've seen the devastating impact when we don't focus on prevention. So I am hopeful that it will get some attention And the special session will not be the end. We need to make sure we keep paying attention to CPS and to prevention going forward into this election season and next year's legislative session as well.
Dana, finally, your thoughts on the job Charles Flanagan is doing so far and your thoughts about Clarence Carter still holding a job.
Well, I think Charles Flanagan is doing an excellent job in very difficult circumstances. He has learned a tremendous amount in a short amount of time about child abuse and neglect, which is not in his background. I think he's a very strong leader and strong at setting clear goals and getting the tools and the support for his staff that are needed to move toward those goals. He can't do it alone, so it will be key for him to have a management team to do that with him. It's very disturbing to me that Clarence Carter remains there, but our time and energy is really focused on going forward and what we can do to make sure that children are protected from abuse and neglect and have safe and permanent and loving homes going forward.
Dana Namark, President and CEO of Children's Action Alliance. Dana, thanks.
Thank you.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein. The Phoenix City Council is expected to experience some contentiousness this afternoon, as possible pay and benefit cuts should bring out a number of unhappy union members. The city's negotiating new labor agreements at the same time it's trying to figure out how to erase a nearly $38 million deficit. Dustin Gardner covers all things Phoenix government for the Arizona Republic and joins me now. Hi, Dustin.
Hey, Steve.
So what union groups are we talking about? Why has the situation become what I'm calling so contentious?
So we have, there's five union groups at City Hall with collective bargaining rights, and two of those five groups have refused to accept the city's final offer on their upcoming contracts. And those two groups are the police officers and AFSCME 2384, which represents skilled laborers like the mechanics and electricians. And those two groups are holding out for a raise, and it looks like it's heading to the point where they'll be an unresolvable impasse with city management, and so city council members would have to impose a contract.
What are council members telling you? Obviously, they have different opinions about a lot of different topics. So what are they saying?
I think a lot of the council members are saying that they don't want it to come to them because if it comes to them, it could be a potentially politically divisive fight. There's strong ideological differences on the council over this issue. We have, you know, a group of pretty labor-friendly council members who are sort of hoping, I think, that the unions will accept the city's best offer, realizing there is the budget deficit. And then we have a faction of conservative council members who say the city's best offer is not acceptable because it also includes pay raises and bonuses for many of the union members.
So overall, I'm coming back to the word contentious. How contentious is this? And is this a matter of, this is like a perfect storm situation, Dustin, where we're in a real struggle, the combination of the budget deficit and the timing of these union negotiations. Are people down there optimistic that this will turn out okay or not?
Yeah, that's a perfect storm is a good description. That's how the city's labor administrator described it to me. It's, you know, this is unprecedented to have these two union groups this far in the process, unwilling to accept agreements. The last time that one of the city's unions got this far without accepting an agreement was in the early 1980s. So I don't think anyone is taking anything for granted. There's a lot of people concerned that this is going to continue and the council members are going to have to impose some sort of deal that's going to leave hundreds of workers, thousands of workers unhappy.
As I mentioned, the city has a nearly $38 million deficit. How did this happen? And any chance that the controversial to some food tax reappears?
So the deficit, the deficit is a result of several factors kind of coming together at once. One of the biggest is for perhaps the city's overly optimistic revenue projections in the past. They overshot their projections by about $25-30 million for the current fiscal year. Mm. I mean, or they undershot. So that's been a major contributor. And then we also have a lot of rising employee costs, pensions, health care have really been skyrocketing the last couple of years. So those factors are coming together and it's creating a pretty tight situation. But the food tax, as far as I understand it, is completely off the table. The council had an opportunity to consider bringing that back. As many listeners might know, they voted to repeal half of that tax early last year, and that cost the city about $33 million in revenue. Mm. But I guess because of the politics, there's some pretty sensitive politics surrounding that. The council has been completely unwilling to revisit that.
What are some of the options that City Manager Ed Zuercher is considering, and are any considered to be dramatic, draconian, whatever word we want to use?
So he's looking, I guess he's looking at three areas to balance this budget. He's looking at employee cuts. The cuts that he's proposed would save about $16 million. He's also looking at revenue and fee, tax and fee increases. And those increases he's proposed would bring about $12 million. And then he's also talked about service cuts. In his initial trial budget, he outlined some $29 million in service cuts to help balance the deficit. But it's important to keep in mind that if employees take those cuts and tax and fee revenues are increased by that roughly $12 million, that would seriously limit the amount of service cuts that would be needed to probably, I was doing the math last night, it looks about potentially $1 million to $2 million in only cuts that would be needed.
And is this an incremental step, Dustin? Are there reasons to believe that they won't be so optimistic in projections going forward, or is it possible the next time the budget comes up, we could be in the same situation?
I think a lot of council members are seeing this as a moment to sort of fix the structural problems that have led to some of Phoenix's budget problems in recent years. They're wanting to get union contracts that clearly outline the benefits and, you know, expenses. They're wanting to get new revenue sources that are going to be secure and stable. And perhaps most importantly, they're wanting to make sure the city is having realistic projections and not forming a budget that's going to, you know, based on revenue forecasts, there are double what might be realized.
And finally, what are council members or others telling you about what they think of Ed Zuercher so far?
I think Ed Zuercher is being, I guess, very well received at this point. He's popular among employees, popular among council members. I think a common perception is that he's sort of cleaning up the mess that he inherited. You know, he did not take the city's helm until late last October. He wasn't in the job permanently until February. And so he was not the person that crafted this previous budget. That was former city manager David Cavazos. And I reached out to David Cavazos to get his take on some of these criticisms, and he's uninterested in commenting.
I guess we shouldn't be totally surprised by that. Dustin Gardner covers Phoenix government for the Arizona Republic. Dustin, thanks as always.
Thanks, Steve.